This is the Simon Dell Show, where we take a deep dive into some of the week's most notable business and marketing stories and interview high-performing business leaders and marketing professionals to find out their lessons for success.
If you stop talking to your customers, I guarantee you, you're not going to get very far. It's about the person and it's about the execution. And the minute you do that, and you focus in on a particular audience, all your messaging suddenly becomes super easy because you know.
Welcome to the Simon Dell Show, episode number 51. We are past the celebrations of episode number 50 and back into the slightly more sensible podcasts where we actually learn something from the people we talk to versus the anarchy that is the spin cycle. Now, this week we have a lady on the show called Cheryl Mack. She's Canadian by birth. She resides now down in Sydney and she is the CEO of StartCon, which is the biggest or Australia's largest startup and growth conference. There's obviously one big StartCon every year, but there's also 30 odd other events around Australia every year. She produces a lot of educational content for startup founders. She looks after the company's growth. StartCon is actually owned by freelancer.com, which a lot of you may know, a lot of you may have actually used as well. She used to work there as product manager and a business development manager as well. And she has a background in marketing. So when she used to live in Vancouver and she worked for some iCompass Technologies, startup grind there. So she's very, very, very familiar with the startup scene. So some great stories, some great learnings that she's had from early on in her career, or early on, you know, with her parents' business as well. So great interview, very well worth listening to about startups and growing businesses. So I think you'll enjoy that one. Now, before we get round to listening to Cheryl, we are going to go through the usual bits and pieces. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We would very much appreciate that. You can follow us on Instagram, the simondell.com is the new Instagram handle. And if you want to do your own podcast, then get in contact with Gilberto, who is thepodcastboss.com. And he can help you put your own podcast together. It's very easy because if it wasn't, I probably wouldn't be doing it. But he's the man with all the knowledge and he can do that without you actually even needing to be in the same city as him. So he can do it all remotely for you. Finally, if you want to find out more about what myself and my business partner Matt do, simondell.com. We are digital marketing consultants and we are able to help businesses grow their business through digital channels and digital transformation. So come and give us a holler at hello@simondell.com, or you can find us on LinkedIn, Instagram, which I mentioned earlier, or the website www.simondell.com. That is pretty much it for my introduction. Let's jump into the interview with Cheryl. So welcome to the show, Cheryl Mack. How are you?
I am excellent, thank you.
And you're down in Sydney today, but for the astute listeners in the audience, they'll realize that your accent isn't obviously an Australian accent. So tell us where you're from originally.
It is not an Australian accent. No, it is actually a Canadian accent. So I grew up in Canada. I went to school in Vancouver. I lived there for 6 years before I moved to Sydney about 4 years ago.
Okay, so obviously slight weather differential between Vancouver and Sydney. Are you a warm weather person or a cold weather person now?
Definitely a warm weather person. I've acclimatized very quickly here. If it drops below like 15 degrees, I'm like, it's too cold.
So what got you into Sydney? What got you here?
So it was just a bit of a like, hey, let's go and live somewhere else in the world before we settled down in Vancouver. And it just happened to be that we picked Sydney because I actually have a passport here. My parents were born and raised in Adelaide. So when my partner was like, where do you want to go live? I was like, let's do Sydney because I have a passport and I can just show up and ask for a job.
Oh, there we are. That makes sense. But you decided not to go to Adelaide. Have you been to Adelaide?
I have been to Adelaide many times. Love Adelaide. Great place. Not the place I'd like to live.
Somewhat quieter than Sydney.
Yeah, it's just a little small. Yes. I'm a big city girl.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Now, your claim to fame is obviously that you are the CEO of StartCon. Do you want to give us the quick elevator pitch? Well, it doesn't have to be quick because we're not in any kind of time constraints here. But do you want to give us the quick pitch as to what StartCon is?
Sure can. So StartCon is Australia's largest startup and growth conference. We run the event, the major event. We run events throughout the year, but the major event that we run at the end of the year is our main conference. It has about 4,000 people that attend. And it's kind of like, you know, if you were to cross a startup educational event with a, you know, music festival, because it's 2 full days. You know, we have parties each night. There's an expo with 150 exhibitors, but also fun things like food trucks and music and, you know, demos of self-driving cars. There's 4 stages, and the main stage features big international names. We really focus on bringing out some of the biggest international speakers that we can possibly find. So, for example, we've had the CEO of Crunchbase, the CEO of Dribbble, the CEO of Moz, the CMO of ClassPass. So really big names. And we've had like the VPs of growth from Uber, Pinterest, SurveyMonkey, really big companies from all over the world that we fly in to teach Australian founders and entrepreneurs, you know, how to grow their businesses and go global. So I think that's one of the things that we do a little bit differently from most other conferences. I try to avoid, you know, I tell people it's not your grandfather's conference. You're not just going to go and sit there and it's going to be boring and you just sit at one place the whole time. Like, there's so much to do. There's lunches and a pitch competition and a hackathon happening. And we have a corporate innovation track as well for the corporates that like to attend. So it really is like this full on kind of 2.5 day experience. Right. That is just so much fun. And then we also run events throughout the year. We ran a pitch competition across Asia Pacific last year, where we had pitch events in 15 cities, and the top 30 from those got to come to StartCon and pitch in the Grand APAC final. And the prize for that was $1 million investment, which is the largest amount ever offered specifically for this region.
So who would have won that? Who's the last winner of that that you could tell us about?
Yeah, so the winner from last year in 2018 was Datum Analytics. They're actually an Adelaide startup, funny enough.
Nobody fixed that. You didn't kind of have a quiet word to the judges.
Not at all. It was completely organic, which is super cool. So yeah, they're just in due diligence right now, but it's looking pretty positive.
Okay, and I also noted on your LinkedIn profile that you've done, you do some of the interviews at these events, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I've become a bit of a, you know, speaker around the circuit. So, you know, I interview lots of founders, and I used to run Startup Grind in Sydney, as well as I started the Vancouver chapter back when I lived there. So like I ran events every month where I brought in a really successful founder, entrepreneur, and interviewed them in front of an audience. You know, we record that. There's some of them online on YouTube. But yeah, I end up being kind of the go-to person to interview founders.
Because this is my concern. Is that you've done 400 interviews and I've done your number 51 of mine. So I'm kind of feeling a little bit sort of inferior in terms of, you know, interview technique and things like that. So if you could make some notes and let me know later on if it's good or bad, that'd be great. So what got you into the whole, because you've got a background in marketing, what got you into the whole startup scene back in Vancouver? What was it that attracted you in there? Was there a single trigger or something that happened over time?
The single trigger would probably be being born. I was born into it. My parents had their own business, so I grew up in the startup world. I mean, back then it was not like startup wasn't really a word, my parents had their own business, and I was taking apart laptops for them, you know, by the time I was 8, because it was a computer services business. So my dad's engineering type person. And so, yeah, I was born into it. I didn't really have a choice, is kind of the joke. But when I graduated university, I did for a fleeting moment think that because of my marketing background, I should, you know, become a brand manager, which was like the role to get as a marketing graduate, know, back when I was graduating. So I did some of those interviews, decided it wasn't for me. And then I joined a startup and started working on their marketing automation, kind of building their automation, working myself out of a job, and then going on to the next startup. So I did that for, I think, 3 years, where I worked for like 3 or 4 different startups during that time. And then I started working for a SaaS company that was a little bit bigger as their marketing manager. They were about 100 people, and they provide SaaS software for U.S. associations. So I was the marketing manager for about a year as well before I moved here. So I think my education and then going into just straight out of uni, I started working at startups. It really kind of fueled that entrepreneurial kind of getting into the startup ecosystem. And of course, starting the Vancouver chapter of Startup Grind in Vancouver, brought me into that world as well.
Aside from dismantling laptops for your father, what else did, and I presume you put them back together again afterwards, but
sometimes.
What did you learn from watching them run a business?
It's hard. It's hard. I actually, I am lucky, I guess, because I got to see probably the lowest point in running your own business. And that was that, I was maybe like 10 years old or something. We'd booked to go on a vacation somewhere. I don't know where we were, maybe a couple hours away at this like resort. And, I think the business was struggling a little bit. And so they hadn't given everyone raises that year. And we were on this vacation. And I remember very distinctly sitting at the counter when my mom got this call to say one of the employees had essentially like rallied the rest of them to say, oh, they're on a vacation right now. Instead of giving us a raise, let's all quit. So she had essentially like 3 or 4 of the kind of 10-person team quit while we were away. And one of the things that I had actually kind of taken initiative of as a kid with the support of my parents was we'd started this summer camp. It was called Smart Kids, and it was basically, a bunch of kids coming together to learn how to use computers. And it was a camp, and my parents ran that. It was it was born out of my idea, but my parents were running that. And so because these people had quit, my mom had to call a lot of the clients that they were serving and say that we couldn't do it. But B, she also had to call all of the parents of the kids who had booked into our summer camp to say that your kids can't come to camp this week or next week. And that was pretty devastating for me to watch as a kid to see, the business was already struggling a little bit. And then that kind of happened. And then things went a little bit downhill from there. And we went from, I distinctly remember being like, we could afford lots of fun things when I was about 8. Around 12, it went from leased cars, every two brand new leased cars every year to what's the used junk box we can buy to get us around. Right. It went from, whatever you wanted. I mean, my parents didn't spoil me, but it went from kind of, you can get whatever you wanted to like, no, we can't afford that. And that was, that was just directly because of what happened with the business. And, who knows whether it was specifically that lady's fault or, just general business, like just running a business is hard. And I got to see that at a very young age.
What have you done to, what have you done? Have you done anything to help you, bulletproof yourself against those challenges that they faced? Is it just, the cycle of life just goes on and you make the same mistakes or you are faced with the same challenges that they were faced with?
Yeah, I mean, look, early on in, when I was in university, I did start a couple of ventures, none of which were particularly successful, one of which actually lost money and I ended up having to repay my investors, who were my aunt and uncle and my mom and dad, with my own money, which I did. It wasn't much, but I learned a lot And this other one, which was selling glow sticks, was, I wouldn't say wild.
That's a classic rave, yeah. Rave early 2000. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it was super successful either. At least I didn't lose money on that. But, you know, since then I really haven't like gone 100% in starting my own business. And, you know, everything I've done, like I'm a great business builder. I help a lot of startups in terms of mentoring and just advising and supporting. But I cannot tell you the last time I really went hard on, you know, just creating my own business 100% full time. And that's probably just, you know, a realization of, you know, that is a really tough situation to jump into. And it's not something that I'm willing to do right now, and not in the foreseeable future. So everything I've done has been backed, and so that's how I protect myself. Like I built StartCon.
No, that's that's a good point. No, you know, do you see similarities occurring with some of the startups that you talk to or you work with, and all those kind of things that you see back from the same sort of things that you see from your parents' time as well, and try and pre-warn them?
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, like the difficulties you face don't really change. The technology and the environmental, you know, factors change, but at the core of it, like hiring the right people has been a huge challenge when my parents were starting their own business. It's still a challenge now. Getting investment, cash flow, like these are not things that, you know, maybe the way you track your cash flow has changed, but a business's cash flow is something that hasn't, you know, it hasn't become less of a problem. It's very similar. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of similarities, and there's a ton of things that I do tend to, you know, talk to founders about. You know, early stage founders, I tend to talk to them a lot about picking a co-founder, because you find a lot of these business entrepreneurs who are like, oh, I have this great idea and I'm really working on it, but I need a tech co-founder to build it for me. Yeah. And that's like the most typical thing. And they're just super quick to like, I just need to find somebody to work on this. And I'm like, you need to really think about what that means. Like, you are getting into bed with this person. You're pretty much marrying them for potentially the next, you know, 5 years. You don't just want to pick someone to build it if you're not willing to pay them. It's a very different relationship if you're just going to hire somebody to build this thing for you. But if you really want a tech co-founder, you need to understand that they're investing their time. They're going to be your co-founder, and you're going to need to like live and work with this person. So I warn a lot of people about that. Other ones, I mean, I talk about run rate all the time, and you'd be surprised at how many startups can't tell me what their run rate is. They're like, oh, I want to raise money in the next, or they're just like, oh, I want to raise money. And I'm like, okay, when are you thinking? And they're like, oh, maybe like 5 to 6 months. And I'm like, okay, so like, what's your run rate? Like, when are you going to run out of money? And they're like, oh, well, we're kind of self-funded. We've got 4 people on the team. And then thankfully, some of them get to that 6 month period, haven't raised money, and they figure it out and they keep going. But a lot of the time, others get to that 6 month mark or even 2 months later and they've run out of money and they're like, I got to go back to work because I ran out of money to work on this startup. So just managing, like knowing how much money you have and when you're going to need to raise, if that's the route you want to go, is really important, especially at the early stage. At the later stage, it becomes much more about the team and the people and building culture and running sustainably. Like at the early stage, when you're, you know, 5-10 people, things can be a little hectic. You can run some red lights. You can, you know, you can skip over a couple of things. But when you start to get to the like 50 to 100 mark, you really need to start putting some processes in place and paying attention to who you hire, because this is when you're getting serious. Like, you're a real business here. You've probably taken some money, and the people really are the most important part of your business. And most people don't realize that. They think it's the product.
One of the questions I was going to ask, but given your background in marketing, given the startups that you've worked with, and obviously because, you know, we talk a lot about marketing here, and I know this isn't a one size fits all question, it's not a one size fits all answer. What are some of the things that you see that businesses do from a marketing perspective that makes them more successful? And again, as I say, I know you can't, you know, one solution doesn't necessarily apply to all businesses, but are there some basic things that people should do well?
Yeah, 100%. So the first one that a lot of people tend to forget is talk to your customers. Like, really go and talk to them. It's super easy at the early stage. It gets a little bit harder at the later stage, but if you stop talking to your customers, I guarantee you, you're not going to get very far. So, like, you know, a lot of people have ideas around like, oh, I want to build this. I want to build this. Great. Go ask your customers if that's what they would want. Like, pick up the phone and talk to them. I, like, without fail every year, the first like 5 to 10 people who buy StartCon tickets, I call them up and I'm like, hey, how was the process? Why'd you buy your ticket? Did the platform work? Can you access your ticket? Did you get the right emails? Are you excited for StartCon? Like, what's up? And it just keeps you in touch with your customers and keeps you being able to deliver what they want. It's a really, really sustainable thing. And it's also really, really easy to do. Like, a lot of the time they're super happy to hear from you. A lot of the people who buy StartCon tickets, when I call them up, they're like, oh my gosh, the CEO of StartCon called me. That is super cool. They're like, that's amazing. So it's a very easy one to do and highly recommend. Talk to your customers, even if they're not even your customers yet. If you have an idea, go talk to the people that you think you're going to sell it to. So that's number one. Number two is simplify. So, you know, you might have a product that is for SMEs. You're like, that my audience is SMEs. That's a very, very broad audience when you think about it. And the people who are more successful actually narrow their focus. And I find it's tough for entrepreneurs and founders to do this because they see the big picture. They're like, everyone can use this. It's going to be amazing. We're going to have this huge audience. You know, the SME market in Australia is like billions of dollars alone, right? But the ones that I find are more successful, especially in the early days, are the ones that are actually able to focus in on a niche, even if it's not the ultimate niche or company or customer group that you think are going to use the product. Being able to focus in actually allows you to do your marketing so much better. So instead of saying SMEs, let's pick a digital marketing agency. Like, that's an SME. They're trying to grow. Let's pick digital marketing agencies. And then your landing page goes from the best SaaS product for SMEs to grow their business to the best platform for digital marketing agencies to connect with their customers. And the minute you do that and you focus in on a particular audience, all your messaging suddenly becomes super easy because you know exactly who's going to use it and how they're going to use it and what problem you solve for that group. Once you've conquered one, you can then pick another one and do it again for dry cleaning businesses or do it again for marketplaces. And you can just have all these different messaging for each of these funnels, and it makes your marketing so much easier. So I recommend focusing and narrowing your audience. And I find that the ones who narrow their audience are a lot more successful, particularly in the early days.
I'm just going to touch on that one because I've just read Seth Godin's recent book called This Is Marketing. I don't know if you've read it.
I haven't read that one. No, I've read some of his other books.
Seth Godin's, you know, you either like or you hate Seth Godin. You kind of fall into one of those two categories. And a lot of people say if you've read one Seth Godin book, you've read them all. But I took a lot out of the last one when he talks about that very, very narrow market, just concentrating on the smallest viable market possible with your product and taking it to them first, because that's a better, you know, I'm really doing a bad job of paraphrasing his entire book here, but it's about focusing on that very, very small viable market and getting them
to
buying
love
into
your product
it before you, before you try and, you know, show it to the rest of the world. So, I definitely recommend the book. I'm, you know, still a Seth Godin fan, but,
check it out.
It's interesting that you're saying the same sort of thing there as well.
Yeah.
Any other points that from a marketing perspective that you think are useful for people from a starting point?
Testing is always a good one. If you're going to spend money, particularly, like paid advertising, try to think of ways you can test that channel before dumping a ton of money into it. So, you know, if you're like, okay, I've got 10 grand to spend on marketing this year, rather than saying, okay, I'm going to put $2,000 into Facebook, $2,000 into LinkedIn, $2,000 into Twitter, $2,000 into, I don't know, Instagram influencers, and $2,000 into something else. It's much better to say, I'm going to put $200 into each of those, see what results I get, and then decide which channel I'm going to put the most money, more money into, and which ones I'm not going to put more money into. So, and that kind of goes, like, it's really easy to do with paid because you can just take a small section, put a little bit of money into it, see what your results are. So it's easier to do with paid. But this principle still applies to other channels that may not be just directly paid as well. So, you know, you could say, I'm going to try to work with, you know, 3 or 4 influencers and see where I get to before launching this whole plan about I'm going to target hundreds of influencers and get them to promote my product. You don't know if that strategy is going to work yet. So trying to test things out a little bit before you put a whole bunch of effort into that particular strategy is always a good thing to do. And I do see a lot of companies are very successful and with that kind of small iterations testing phase.
I'm going to ask you now, because I kind of, you know, a lot of people really get excited about the startup space. And obviously that's why StartCon has become, you know, so big after all these years, because, you know, back when your parents were starting a business, as you said, the idea of a startup didn't really exist. It was just running a business.
Yeah.
You know, and I saw my father do it as well, and for sort of, you know, 3-4 years, and then, you know, really struggle with it. But, when you see all these startups, when you see all this new technology, and you're exposed to all this, what's the most exciting thing for you? What's the most exciting new technology or new ideas that you kind of regress a little bit into an excited child about?
I mean, there's definitely been a ton. I get excited about tons of the founders who come to me pitching their ideas or talking about their startup. I do get excited for a lot of these founders. I think the ones that I get like really excited for the future about are the ones that are making things more accessible for the average person. So, you know, there is tons of like education, medical stuff, things that people would normally have to pay lots of money to access. The startups that are making that process easier, more convenient, cheaper, more accessible, those ones I get particularly excited about, because when we make services more accessible to the general masses, regardless of your, you know, income, social status, location in the world, then we elevate everyone, and we are working towards, I think, a better future for the entire world, because everyone gets the chance to have opportunities that everyone else has. And you start to see less restrictions, less gaps in terms of income, wealth, et cetera, et cetera. And I think those are the most exciting startups that I get really excited about, because we're just, it seems like we're building a better future.
Interesting you mentioned education there. I've been following a organization in the US called Lambda School. I think it's called Lambda School, run by a guy called Austin Allred. Mm-hmm. And they're running a system where you can go and get qualified in things like programming, you know, kind of the more modern, you know, degrees, that sort of stuff. And you don't pay them back until you start earning a certain amount of money. And there's a lot of people that are looking at this, because this place is churning out all these people who would have never been able to access traditional education or that sort of level of traditional education.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And they're moving straight into, you know, great software jobs, great programming jobs, great, you know, all those kind of things, with great salaries without having this burden of massive. I mean, they've still obviously got a burden of a debt hanging over them, but it's not, you know, but it's only being paid back once they reach a certain level that it's that they're able to pay back.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of different structures around education that lots of different countries, organizations, and are trying, and it'll be really interesting to see what comes out as the successful ones in the next couple of years.
Is there anything you've seen in the last few years that you've looked at and gone, no, that's never going to work, and they've proved you wrong?
Oh, not really. I mean, like I rarely actually say those words. And the reason is this, you know, it's really generally not about the idea. It's about the person and it's about the execution. So, you know, there are definitely ideas where I'm like, that sounds stupid. Right. But yeah. I would never tell them that. And, you know, I say it in maybe different words. I'm like, look, I don't know anything about that. You know, it doesn't make sense to me, but you know, if this is an area that you know you're passionate about and you see the value, like I would encourage you to go for it, try it, see if you can make this work. You know, what do I know, right? Like, and the thing is, you know, I firmly believe nobody really knows anything. So if somebody's telling you that idea is dumb and it's not going to work, like, don't listen to that person. There's literally nobody in the world that I would tell a founder to listen to if they said your idea is dumb and it's never going to work. Yeah. You know, yeah. I wouldn't say definitely throw your life savings away on that idea, but I would say don't listen to that person. Go try, see if you can get some traction here. Go talk to some people, see if that's actually a problem that they want solved and that they would be willing to give you money for. You know, if not, you move on, right? So I try not to tell people that. I might think it internally, but more likely what I think is you're not the right person to do that. People come to me with tons of ideas and they're always asking me, you know, what do you think of this idea? My answer is what I think shouldn't matter, first of all, about your idea. But, you know, when they explain things to me, a lot of the time I'm like, you know, that sounds like a great idea, but maybe they're pitching me something for the travel industry. And I'm like, that sounds great. I would definitely use that. But what's your experience in the travel industry? Have you worked for a travel agency? Have you traveled the world? Have you done anything in that space? And they're like, no, my sister just ran into this problem and I think it's brilliant. And I'm like, probably is. Could be a great idea. Are you the right person to execute that? Nope.
Yeah. Conversely, what's something that you've seen recently that you would put your money into?
Oh, so many.
well, I was going to say, you can give me a couple, but I'll be interested just to hear.
One that I got particularly excited about recently is actually funny enough, and this isn't a bias at all, is another Adelaide startup. And and the reason is because they are making mini microscopes that fit onto your phone. And the applications for those are just endless, right? Like I sent one to my dad, who's an engineering professor or an electrician professor back home in Canada. I sent one to him and he's using it to, you know, teach his students to help them, you know, see the little circuit boards more closely. They're being used by farmers who have little tiny specks of bugs on their crops that normally would need to be taken as a sample, sent off to a lab and returned back to say what bug it is and how to actually treat your crops. You then just take a picture with your microscope on your phone and you get that analyzed in minutes. Why I'm particularly excited about that is if you think about what the Raspberry Pi did with computers a couple of years ago, right? Like it's this $35 computer that you can get and build anything you want with it. They're kind of like the Raspberry Pi for microscopes. So this microscope is, you know, $20. It attaches to your phone and the opportunities there are, you know, really endless and can make life a lot. And it comes back to one of those startups that I say are, you know, making things more accessible for the average person and improving life for people who, you know, they can take that thing to Africa and, you know, diagnose skin conditions just by enlarging the skin right there on site without having to send it off to a lab.
Yeah.
Right. So that one I'm particularly excited about.
What's that company called?
It's called Go Micro.
Okay, cool.
Micro.
We'll have a look at that later.
Yeah, absolutely. What are some other ones that I've seen recently? I've seen some cool stuff in like the payment space. I think payments still have a long way to go. I really like what safety culture are doing in terms of, you know, making things safer at the workplace with a really simple, easy to use app. It kind of, some of these things, it seems obvious when yeah. you know, you think about it, but just the execution needs to be there, right? Like, you can come up with a great idea. You can say, look, this is obvious. Why isn't anyone else doing it? But if the execution yeah. isn't done right, it's never going to get anywhere.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, coming back to what you said before, I think there's a lot of things, there's a lot of opportunities in niche businesses, but they need people that have experience within that niche business to be able to actually,
yeah.
well, first of all, just notice that that could be improved. I remember working years ago with a guy who was in the welding industry, and he'd come to me and said, that the welding equipment needs to be tested every 6 months. That's part and parcel of Australian regulation, and it's apparently the same sort of regulation worldwide. But a lot of people who are going around testing welding equipment are still doing it with a clipboard and a piece of paper. And then obviously they go back to the office, they write up all their notes, they enter them into the computer, they create an invoice, blah, 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 all these kind of things. And he'd created an app which did everything that the test required in about half the time on site, and then automatically, you know, produced a report, sent an invoice, et cetera, et cetera. So anybody that was testing welding equipment could get round and do, you know, twice as many every day, and then have no issues in the evening where they're having to sit and write all these things up. But unless you're in the welding industry or the tech, you're never going to know about that.
Yeah. And it doesn't so count to just hear it from a friend who's in the yeah. welding industry, and then you go and like those rarely work.
Yeah, yeah. And I met a guy yesterday who exports fish, and I said, and he was a little startup, just works on his own, and I said to him right at the start, I was like, where did this come from? Why are you exporting fish? And he goes, oh, it was completely out of the blue. And I go, and I always take those sort of things with a pinch of salt, because I go, you can't, yeah. you don't just one day start exporting fish. It's not, you know, but it turns out he'd been a spear fisherman. He'd right. been a champion yeah, spear fisherman for years. So for years he'd been killing them, and now he was breeding them and exporting them. Yeah. So to him, he hadn't actually, it was funny because he hadn't drawn the link between the two. You know, he was like, oh, you know, I just started this completely out of the blue. But anyway, so next question. You've obviously seen a lot of people speak. You've obviously met a lot of people. You've done a lot of interviews. Who inspires you? Who in the world that you've heard speak, or books you've read or whatever, that you've sat there and gone, you know what, I would listen to this person 24 hours a day, 7 days a week?
A lot of people. So I actually do read Seth Godin's email every day that he sends out.
Okay.
I do read quite a few books. I like to, my favorite ones, and maybe, you know, a bit of a guilty pleasure, but some of my favorite books are around the businesses that failed. And I think it's really interesting to read why they failed. You know, like I read yeah. Bad Blood, which is about Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos. That was super interesting. Smartest Guys in the Room about Enron, Too Big to yeah. Fail. Like these, I think these are like big, big stories of big, big failures. And it's really interesting to see what went wrong. So those are kind of inspiring in an opposite way, I guess.
Just to touch on that one, I read, there's a book, I did a review on my LinkedIn called The Creative Curve by a guy called Alan Gannett.
Yeah.
And he talks about the business that went up against, there was, and do you know what, I'm not going to be able to remember the name of it, but there was a social network that started about 2 months before Facebook started by the same, a similar kind of group of people. And he touches, I think, for about half a chapter on why that failed. And that's absolutely fascinating. So, and just very quickly, it failed. His opinion is it failed because it actually had too many features compared to Facebook. They'd actually overthought it and launched everything at once. It was a much better product.
Yeah.
But the end user was like, oh, there's just too much going on here. Yeah. Whereas Facebook was much simpler. So,
yeah. And anyway, that comes sorry, back I'll, to I've my, interrupted, I'll let you. That comes back to my point about yeah. simplifying, yeah. right? You can yeah, add more absolutely. Later, but you know,
yeah.
simplifying it at the start is a really good idea. Yeah. What else? Look, I mean, I've had a chance to meet some really amazing people. This year I met the co-founder of General Assembly, you know, the global education company. He recently sold yeah. it for 400 and something million. Really, really really great guy, very inspirational, very down to earth. And he was just, you know, he really, really inspired me to, you know, he created something amazing that really had a purpose behind it around education. And not only that, he also runs another thing called Daybreakers, which are like sober morning dance parties, which just brings amazing people together. And so he was really inspiring for me to listen to him talk.
You weren't trying to sell him your glow sticks, were you?
I was not. No, I should maybe. That was a great. I was obsessed with glow sticks. I don't know what it was. I'm like 16 years old and just like obsessed with glow sticks. But anyway,
when we promote this episode, can I please have a photo with you with some glow sticks?
Oh,
please.
I think you'd be hard pressed to find one now. I was actually lucky. My Facebook account got hacked the first year of university, and so I ended up having to start a new one. And although I was devastated at the time, you know, it was kind of a blessing in disguise because all of my photos from high school suddenly disappeared. Gone.
Probably dodged a bullet there.
Yep. Nobody could link me to anything anymore. Like I wasn't tagged in any of anybody else's photos. So my Facebook history starts around second year university when I was slightly, I'm not going to say a lot, but slightly more responsible.
Well, I'm slightly more fortunate is that there was no Facebook when I was at university. And I thank God for that every day. Do you know what I mean? Because that would just be the end of me. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, I keep interrupting you. Go on. Tell us some of the other people.
So another one that I met recently when I was at LA Summit Series in November of last year was Jamie Siminoff. He's the founder of Ring. What's interesting about that is that I've watched Shark Tank since forever. And so I saw him pitch DoorBot on Shark Tank, I think seasons 5 or something. Didn't get a deal, thought it was super cool. He ended up getting money from Richard Branson later. And so I kind of followed the story a little bit, but I had a chance to really have a good chat with him at this event that I was at. You know, he was speaking, but he sat down right next to me before he went up to speak, and we had a good chat. And just and I should also add that he recently sold his business to Amazon for $1 billion and is now a shark on Shark Tank. So jeez, really came full circle. Yeah, exactly. But this guy was like so down to earth. I learned a bit about how he built the company, you know, how he built the culture, and just really, really inspiring in terms of what he's done in building a company from what was essentially a product. And what's cool as well is that they are actually also for purpose. Their mission is to reduce crime in neighborhoods, which they've actually been able to achieve with this product. And so I just thought, you know, what he's done in terms of building an amazing business that is, you know, worth a lot, but also, you know, this is a product. It's the Ring. They changed the name from DoorBot to Ring. Now, this is a product that's in Costco's around the world now and actually has been proven with studies, particularly in the US, that they've done studies that having this has reduced crime in neighborhoods, which I think is like one of the most important things, right? You talk about wanting to see a better world in the future. Reducing crime in high crime neighborhoods is one of the things that, you know, we should be looking towards doing. So, he was very inspiring. I think the founders that I've met who realize that it's a tough slog, the fact that they made it is really amazing and almost, you know, lucky that, you know, they could have been in the seat of the entrepreneurs that they're talking to, you know, very easily and not up there on the stage. So the ones that really inspire me to do good in the world are the ones that are I think more down to earth, realize that they're giving back.
My last three questions, my third to last is one normally about great brands that you like, but I think we've kind of covered a lot of that off there. And I think we're good with that. So I'm going to change that one for pitching advice. So one piece of pitching advice, if you're getting up standing in front of investors or you're getting up at StartCon and, you know, wherever you are in the world, what's the one thing that you've got to nail?
You know what? It's, you got to get your passion across. You really got to get your passion across. I've seen thousands of startups pitch, and sometimes, you know, they're there, they're focused on the product. They want to talk about the features. They want to talk, but being able to actually get across how passionate you are about solving this problem not passionate about the product you've built, but really passionate about the problem that you're solving, your company is dedicated to, and your mission, getting that passion across is actually really, really valuable. You wouldn't believe the number of founders that I've seen pitch who are up there and they're like, okay, so look, I have this product and it's going to save a lot of people time and money because they have this problem with, and they kind of run through it and it's like, okay, okay. And then they step off stage and I'm having a chat with them and they're like, yeah, look, we're just doing these amazing things. And, you know, we really have this mission to help founders build their businesses quicker. We're going to help a lot of people by doing this. And the tone of voice, the energy just completely changes when we're talking one-on-one versus when they're on stage. And I'm like, this energy did not come across on stage. It sounded like you were bored with your product or you didn't even know what you were talking about. So, and that comes with practice. I would say the number one tip is practice. Practice a lot. Pitch to your dog, pitch to your kid, pitch to your mom, pitch to the stranger on the street, pitch to anybody who will listen to you. Because the more you practice, the better you're going to get. And the more comfortable you are with your pitch, the more you are going to be able to get that passion across.
We're at the start of 2019. We're still in the middle of, or middle till the end of January. What have you got planned for the rest of the year? I mean, yourself personally, but StartCon as well.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think we've created an amazing event, always striving to go bigger and better. You know, I'd love to hit 5,000 people attending this year, get some amazing speakers out to teach Australian entrepreneurs here. In terms of, you know, the pitch competition, I think we'd love to give away another $1 million in investment and equity.
To another Adelaide company.
Potentially. Yeah. We'll see where they come from. I think we have some great things ahead. I'm really looking forward to helping a lot of founders. You know, I already mentor a couple. So just, you know, helping more grow their businesses and doing some pitch workshops and everything. So yeah, that's me.
Cool. Fantastic. Final question. If anybody wants to get hold of you, what's the best, if they got a question or they're interested in attending StartCon or, you know, if they're interested in attending StartCon, they should buy a ticket. But, you know, bigger questions, if they want to ask you something, what's the best place to talk to you?
Yeah. So if they want to attend StartCon or just learn more about StartCon, go to startcon.com. It's like Comic-Con, but for startups. So startcon.com. Sign up for the newsletter. You'll know when we release tickets. And it's on November 22nd and 23rd this year here in Sydney. If you want to get in touch with me, email is generally best. I do try to pay attention to my LinkedIn. that one's a little less foolproof, but you can add me on LinkedIn. I accept everybody. And then you can message me on LinkedIn. You may have to try a couple of times, but if you're genuine about reaching out, generally I'll be able to pick those out of my list. Email is all right, although I don't want to give that out publicly. So
no, don't do that.
If anyone is listening and really would like to get in touch with me for a genuine purpose other than to sell me something, I would be happy for them to get in touch with you and you can provide them with my email.
I think probably LinkedIn is the best bet. They'll all come after you there. So yeah, you know, that's probably the safest place. You're not on Twitter?
I am on Twitter. Yep. It's CMAC, the number 4 life. So CMACK. Okay. There's a K on the end of that. Number 4 life. CMAC for life. Cool. You know, my last name is Mac, MACK. So CMAC.
It's a great surname. It's a great, it's like, you know, this kind of, I mean, there's all sorts of nicknames that you must have got at school with that.
Oh yeah, CMAC. CMAC is my nickname.
CMAC. Yeah. Was that
pretty cool. Gangster
that's,
name,
that's
you know?
Cool. Yeah, that is a pretty gangster. A pretty gangster name. Anyway, look, thank you very much for being on the show today. It's been fantastic having you here. And good luck with everything that you've got planned for this year. So thank you for contributing.
Awesome.
That's pretty much it for this week. Hope you have enjoyed it. Thank you very much for tuning in. We do appreciate you listening. If you get a chance to rate and review us, fantastic. Even better, if you get a chance, please share this podcast. Let anybody know that might be interested about what we do and who we're talking to. Otherwise, we will see you next week. Thank you.